Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's give a big shout out to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Oh, yeah. What?
Would you guys call me the conductor?
I've thought about it, but I don't want you to get power mad.
Like I haven't already gotten there?
No, I think you're okay. You're on the edge. You're just on the edge. Your power... lukewarm.
Power curious.
Thank there, you. That was much better. Yeah.
You're Noel. I'm Ben. This is Ridiculous History. Mm-hmm. We're on the road for a couple of different adventures right now. So you may hear us doing some guest spots on some friends' shows. We are coming to you two-thirds of the way from New York.
Oh, yes, I see. Yeah. I see. I got it. I got the calculation there. And yeah, you also might hear the thrum of a heating unit that I can't figure out how to turn off, but I'm doing my best. I've got the mic pointed away from it. And Maxwell, I'm calling you that for this episode for reasons, by the way. Usually is pretty good at magicking that stuff away.
Oh, and Maxwell James, maybe, if you want to use him.
Maybe. Yeah. We'll see. I don't know.
Ole MJ. Also, Noel, if you're comfortable with us doing this on air, I can tell you what the fan is. Background, folks, we're in the same hotel.
Yeah.
Recording remotely.
We haven't seen each other yet,
though. Max is in Atlanta. Yeah, uh-huh. Okay, so I was trying to figure this out while I was doing some research this morning, because I flew in an ungodly hour. I know what this is. Okay. Noel, if you go to your door and then you see the light switch by the front door, you're going to see a little plaque that says like sound cancellation, something or other.
Okay,
yeah, hang it's on. Like a little
hold,
knob.
Hold
yeah,
tight.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me go caress the knob. Wait, not you get it.
You get it. And so while we're doing that, I hope that works. Bit of background, folks. Today's episode is all about model trains, hence our banter at the beginning.
What black magic is this?
Oh, did it work?
Yeah, it worked. And it's weird because this hotel, I guess the building is old because it's one of those places where it has no convenient outlets. And the outlets that it does have don't like to grip a modern plug very well. Right. They just kind of slide right out. And yet it has this newfangled noise masking system for the heating.
It's because it's an open air, like, atrium inside, mm-hmm. and they have that live band.
That's right.
That's what's happening.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, so the noise I was hearing was the feature, not the bug.
Right.
It's on purpose. It's white noise just being generated. It wasn't being generated by, wow, we're all learning so much about this hotel. Right. I'm not going to dox us and say which one it is, but I like it here. We like it here, and we haven't been in a while, and I'm excited to be back in New York, and I know we'll see each other in person very soon, Ben, but in the meantime, we can just pretend like it's business as usual, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then big aspiration I'm putting on my vision board is I hope next time we're on the road, we can bring super producer Max Williams with us.
Bro, for a second, I thought you were saying, right now I'm putting on my Vision Pro goggles so that I can experience this from the moon.
Right. There we go. And we will podcast on the moon one day.
We'll be the first.
We'll be the first.
Mark our words. We've said it here, folks. Speaking of aspirational.
Vision boards, yeah. So that might sound like a crazy ambition. Why would you guys do that kind of thing? But you know what? Once upon a time, people said the same thing about toys like model trains.
Bro, once upon a time before that, people said the same thing about trains.
That's a very good point, yes. If God had wanted us to use railroads, we would have tracks and wheels instead of feet. Whatever.
I butchered 100%, that. Yeah.
So this is something that has been on our minds for a while. I think, you know, like a lot of kids, I grew up with I would say a dabblement in the world of model trains, because these things can get super ornate and super expensive pretty quickly. I don't know if you have ever had the chance to like go over to a friend's house or maybe a museum or an exhibit, and you see someone who's gone all in, like they have sacrificed their basement to have a little town with a train.
Yeah, no, I haven't. But if there is ever one that I want to experience, it belongs to the seminal 1970s and on into, well, 60s even, and on into the present. Singer, songwriter, artist extraordinaire Neil Young, who has apparently a 1,000-foot, square-foot model train situation on his ranch in Northern California. And he's so into classic trains, including a Lionel number 752W Union Pacific, not specific, but Pacific, Streamliner from the 30s, as well as a wireless control system, all of this, like, early model train stuff that we're going to get into. That'd be the one. I want to hang out with Neil in his model train dungeon, whatever it is. Sounds more like a barn situation.
1,000 square feet. That's quite humbling.
It's insane. Because
that's larger than some of, like, one of my old apartments.
100%, dude.
But I think this these things are really fascinating because they also tell us a bit about the time in which they were created, their way to view society. And we also know, we're just going to go ahead and say this, we're going to lean on Max at a couple points in our conversation today because Max is a madman for model trains.
Madman Max, the conductor. Max, the mad conductor Williams.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. And so these early trains, the first ones, like they date back to, I guess, like model railroading, the actual ones that work and aren't just carved things. These date back to the early 19th century. Tin plate toys were first manufactured and they were powered by clockwork mechanisms. So they were pretty complicated.
Very complicated, very expensive to produce, not really in the realm of like mass manufactured objects, right?
I would say, you know, in the beginning, probably not, because they hadn't quite become popular right when they started. It was by the end of the 19th century, the end of the 1800s, that the first commercial model trains were made. So I'd say you're correct on that. And well, let's get into it. Let's start with this great article by Barry Coulter from O-Gage Train Repair. And O-Gage, if you re-listen to this episode, then the title of that website will make much more sense to you.
For sure. And by the way, Neil Young's, at least one of his you know, largest model train setups is an O-gauge, which is a larger scale model train. We'll get into some of these terms. According to Coulter, model trains, this is a quote from this article, have been the Christmas delight of youngsters for many generations. From the most primitive replicas of the Iron Horse in the 1800s to the most sophisticated railroad sets of today, trains have remained atop the Christmas lists of both the young and the old.
Mm-hmm. Because, as we're finding, they're also hacking nostalgia, right? Because kids have this vision often associated with holidays, birthday, Christmas in particular, for the practitioners of Christmas. So when it reminds me so much of what happens with Legos, because Legos are kind of pricey. And one of the biggest Lego markets isn't children. It's adults who can finally afford all the cool spaceships their parents wouldn't buy you. Bolins.
Well, yeah, exactly. Isn't that funny, though? I mean, it's maybe I'm stating the obvious here, but nostalgia obviously works in cycles, right? Mm-hmm, because you can't have nostalgia for something until it's old and kind of been forgotten and fallen out of fashion. And then all of a sudden, you know, before you know it, it sort of has this resurgence that can kind of, you know, wax and wane a little bit on its own. And, you know, Lego, of course, and model trains as well, as we'll see, really capitalize on that, not only because of the, you know, the medium itself, but all the tie-ins, like you mentioned spaceships, right? A lot of the big, really expensive Lego sets are tied in with things like Star Wars, and they'll be the classic Star Wars designs, like the Death Star, the Millennium Falcon, or what have you.
Yeah, 100%. And I love all of those. In fact, I had a dark night of the soul a few months back where I got very close to buying just a cartoonishly expensive Lego set that I had no room to put anywhere and I had no business buying.
We've been doing the Lego set like floral arrangements. And we've got so many of them now and have actually very recently started growing our own actual facts flowers. So the Lego flowers are sort of starting to be a little bit in the way. I've had to relegate them to my basement studio situation, which is fine because I love them and they never die.
Nice. Yeah, I've got a couple of the Lego architecture sets. Mm-hmm. People kept giving those to me for Christmas because I said anything but socks to my friends who celebrate Christmas.
But also socks. As an adult, I love a good sock.
I feel like I'm always almost out of socks. It's weird. But all right, today's story about model trains. We have to talk about trains, the actual trains people, you know, normal-sized people ride in. And this concept is modern in the grand scheme of things, I guess, but it dates back a surprisingly long time. Coulter points out the concept of steam engine trains and locomotives, yes, doesn't come around till the 1800s, but the idea of making a train dates all the way back to, you know, ancient Rome.
Oh, man. I mean, it's really just a practical way of moving stuff. You know, if one bucket full of stuff is good, then why not link 10 or 20 buckets full of stuff? And then you have to do the calculation of, well, how much pull do I need to get these things moving? In the Roman times, they actually created these paved sort of precursor railway systems for these wagons that were drawn by, of course, animals. And then later in England, we started to see horse-drawn wagons that were built out of the same kind of idea in order to carry coals from the mines where they were, you know, mined, to loading sites onto boats where they could then be shipped and used for trade, you know, to all parts of the United Kingdom. So it is a pretty – and then, of course, in the early days of trains, we start seeing, you know, the iron horse. That's the term that's being used because, you know, it's replacing the actual horse, much like horsepower in cars is used as the sort of amorphous measurement for, you know, how fast and how much torque, you know, a vehicle can produce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's kind of a skeuomorph almost, right? The concept of horsepower.
Yeah. Remind us again. I think we talked about it on our episode with Mo Rocco, but the skeuomorph is sort of a familiar thing that's built into a new thing to make people not scared of the new thing.
Yeah. That's a pretty good definition there. The roots of model trains go back to when steam-powered locomotives are first introduced. And this is a common thing because, you know, you see it now in 2024 as we record, a lot of young kids, like very young children, go through these phases where they're fascinated with machinery, right? Like construction equipment, et cetera.
Dump trucks,
space shuttles. So when the steam-powered locomotive comes out, it's like on the level of a space shuttle, and it's launching the world into industrialization. It becomes this symbol of progress, of innovation. And James Maxwell, no relation to our pal Max Williams, he cites that. I had to get that one in for you, Max. Oh, yeah. He cites that they become this iconic thing. Originally, they weren't made for kids. They were made for engineers and people working in the railroad industry so that they could understand how actual full-scale trains would work.
Absolutely.
Which is what you do in engineering.
You still do it.
Yeah.
If you ever, you know, seen like city planners or urban planners and things like that, you'll always see, you know, these kind of little miniaturized versions of a city or like of a development or whatever. And with prototyping with cars and that level of engineering, especially when it comes to design, you'll see these very elaborately kind of like handcrafted, often clay models of the ultimate design.
I love it. I'm such a sucker for that. I used to hang out at our the building where our old office was. They had a huge scale model.
Mm-hmm.
And it also reminds, you know, it's one of the best parts of Hereditary is the building of those models and dioramas.
The best parts. That movie is such a soul-crushing bummer. But it's excellent. It's very, very good.
It's a classic buddy comedy.
Yeah, right. Not right. For the faint of heart. Yeah, it's true. And a lot of these techniques, you know, have been largely replaced by digital modeling now. But, you know, much like the nostalgia boom that goes along with the, you know, resurgence and popularity of model trains and Legos, like we were talking, there's a lot of sort of classicist sort of ideas behind design where they're like, no, we don't do the digital version. You know, we only do it by hand.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of making things by hand, it should be no surprise then that model trains, like a lot of toys, to be honest, come from this sort of highfalutin, I don't want to say not quite highfalutin, midfalutin artisanal background. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day. Because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
If you want to see the origin of the first train toys, model trains, you're going to look to Germany in the 1830s. Now, when they're making these initial trains, and I know some people don't want to be called toy trains. So when they're making these model trains, the
it's
first
like when your dad says, this isn't a toy, you know, don't touch my stuff.
Or like Hank in Breaking Bad is like they're minerals.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't call it rocks. But anyway, so these German craftsmen or craftsfolk, they pour molten brass or maybe tin into a mold the same way that they earlier made 10 soldiers. And then they zhuzh it up with wooden fittings, like you were talking about, hand-carved stuff. It makes it look like a miniature version of a train, but these things are fragile. They don't have any moving parts. You manually push them along a track.
Yeah, not quite as cool and not quite as indicative of the like true logistics of locomotion, right? Like, which is ultimately, I think, what really attracts people to this stuff is like that makes them like go all out and buy the conductor's hat and stand in the middle of their giant ring of train track model train tracks in their city that they are both, you know, engineer, mayor, and god of.
Exactly. And this gets us to the more elaborate early model trains. Mm-hmm. The craftsfolk over in France are already great tinsmiths, and they become known for making very ornate designs on their toy trains, tall chimneys, just-so spoked wheels. And these trains are, I would say, like, if you look at them, you would think the French ones are almost more like art pieces.
Right.
The German trains had the tracks, but the French trains didn't. You just push them along the floor. And unfortunately, it's kind of like when you look at the pyramids today, when you look at those old original French model trains, you have to realize they used to look a lot different because they were painted, and paint does not stick to tin very well.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, those classic tin toys, unless they've been, you know, sort of preserved or sort of repainted, I guess, they do tend to lose that luster and look a little bit decrepit.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Like, we see other European forces making model trains. There was a designer in England, Sir Henry Wood.
I love this.
Yeah, he's the one who took it up a notch, and he said, how cool would it be if these trains actually worked like real trains? So he builds the first steam-powered toys, and they've got some famous names.
Yeah, that's right. Well, these are more like, I guess, colloquial nicknames, right? The Dribblers and the Piddlers, because of this sort of snail trail they kind of leave behind them with the excess moisture that gets produced from the steam. But still super cool. Again, this is like a scale model kind of situation, and it's operating largely in a similar manner to the real thing.
Yeah, which is endlessly fascinating. They also have, as you point out in the research here, Max, they also have some of the same annoyances for parents that other toys had, like stepping on the Lego piece, you know, now you've slipped on a snail trail. Whoop. Of water. Yep. And you can't break the toy train because you probably paid so much for it.
So these are largely in the realm of the let's say privileged at this point, right?
I mean, not always. Again, I think midfalutin is good. It was definitely a toy that well-to-do children would have. Mm-hmm. But I think also at this time, a lot of families were still making their own toys.
You know, that's a good point. Like homemade especially, dolls and stuff. You know, European toys have a rich history of craftsmanship, you know, and wooden toys and the idea of like making your own that comes from this similar type of design, you know, ethos.
Yeah, agreed. And we also want to point out that the craftsmen who are making these toy trains previously, they were making other toy trains, but they were also making musical instruments. So they had the manufacturing prowess to make the small clockwork mechanisms you needed for these working toy trains. Mm. And their clockwork approach eliminated the design flaw of the first steam-powered toys.
And these definitely would have been largely relegated to the rich, the richies of the riches. The company Newton and Co., which already sounds like a mega bespoke old tiny company. This was the company that was making these much more elaborate brass models. However, they still weren't particularly accurate, try as they might, nor were they, you know, scaled correctly. And again, you know, maybe we haven't gone through this exactly, but I think people can probably put it together. Scaling really refers to just like how, you know, like not one-to-one, but like, you know, if you have like a part that is a certain size compared to the large thing, then that smaller version is going to have that same part be in proportion to the smaller thing, right?
Yeah, just like with any other kind of hobbyist model, whether that's a car or whether that's a, you know, an airplane or something, mm-hmm. the scale is a representation of the proportion, of the accuracy of the proportions. And I think it's like you said, one-to-one. So one-to-one scale is life size.
It's the real thing.
Right.
And we're going to get into the various different types of scale in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, with the European craftsmen with the clockwork trains, these are for the well-to-do families. They don't really catch on in the United States, though, at this point. And that's because it's seen as like kind of a fancy pants European thing until Uncle Sam's folks start making their own trains.
Leave it to the Americans to take something fancy and bespoke and European and turn it into trash. I'm kidding. Oh, wow. They're cool. They're more accessible. It's a big deal that they do this, but it is sort of the reputation, I think, of American design compared to, say, European design and manufacturing to be a little less concerned with the details and a little more concerned with quantity, perhaps, over quality.
Yeah, economy of scale. So it's the mid-1800s. This is where we start to see the U.S. market of toy trains come into the fore. Matthias Baldwin, founder of the Baltimore Locomotive Works, makes a train model in the 1830s. And then if you get to like the late 1830s to 1840, then you'll see several other toy makers start making their own toy trains. And for one reason or another, Americans prefer buying these to the European ones. Probably affordability is a huge part of it.
Absolutely. And I am being grossly general in my description of American manufacture. America obviously makes some really great products, and there are incredible crafts folk here in the United States and have been, you know, for generations. So please do not take my my tongue-in-cheek statement there as a total condemnation of American toy makers and or manufacturers.
Lionel's going to come for us.
Yeah, please don't, Lionel. I'm scared of you. Sebastian Bach, of Skid Row, another massive model train enthusiast, and Neil Young, please don't come for me. Together, gang up on me. But to that point, this is what is considered from 1860 to around 1890, the golden age of American tin train making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of famous train makers come into the game, especially after George Brown and Co. from Connecticut makes the first self-propelled American model train. It was clockwork, not steam-powered. And so you get companies that might be familiar to model train buffs, Ives, Hull and Stafford, Althoff, Bergman and Co., Francis, Field and Francis, James Follows. They sound a lot like watch companies, you know, like a classy bespoke watch company. But still, they didn't have the they didn't have all the accoutrements we associate with model trains today. They just, their designs were simple. They sold the train. The rest of the world you might build around the train was up to you.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that's part of the fun of it, really, is the modular nature of the whole thing, right? Which we'll get into more of the accessory options in a little bit. So train travel has now become a bit more of a thing that you know, everyone can afford. It's not just used for industry. It's used for, you know, moving people and for kind of, you know, taking more kind of pleasure trips, right? James Maxwell, as we mentioned in that Medium article, writes that with the increasing popularity of rail travel and the advent of mass production techniques, the toy train industry really starts to take shape in the late 19th century. This is when we start to see Lionel, which is an American company, and Märklin, which is a German company, start to really emerge as kind of the main players in the game, especially in terms of quality and affordability. Kind of the balance between those two, right?
Right. So they're taking different approaches. Like Märklin focuses on these really accurate, highly detailed replicas of locomotives at what's called rolling stock. Rolling stock is the term for things like cargo units. Rolling stock just describes anything attached or part of the train that is not the locomotive, right? So your caboose, sleeper car.
100%. Think about getting stopped at a railroad crossing and just seeing the line of, you know, shipping containers blasting past you. That's rolling stock.
And so Märklin appeals to collectors who are really about high quality and authenticity. And Lionel gets more of a reputation for these are fun model trains for kids and for serious hobbyists. And this history proves that this approach works very well for Lionel. It was founded in 1900 by Joshua Lionel Cohen, and this company would go on to become one of the most influential manufacturers in all of the United States.
And it's interesting, too, because initially they weren't even manufacturing these as a toy or as, you know, a solution for these hobbyists. We can totally picture this if we think of the classic toy store, you know, department store kind of window dressing operation with the train, the model train going around and around a track that's maybe, you know, elevated up in the ceiling, right? And that is what the original Lionel designs were meant to do. The Electric Express was designed to be a particularly fetching window display for toy stores.
Yeah, and it worked, by golly, by gum, because, you know, at this point, when they designed their first train, the Electric Express, and show it in toy stores, they're working in a world where most people are not going to have electricity in their house. So that's this huge appeal. And by the time we hit 1906, they're moving so quickly, companies start selling pre-assembled tracks. You can get different rolling stock and engines. And this is where the modern Lionel Train Company really begins to take shape. Because, look, yeah, it might not be fancy. It might not be the locomotive equivalent of a Philip Patek or something. But we know people were saying, hey, these are really good toys. They do have a lot of quality. And then Lionel does something that's even smarter. They introduce all these cool little bells and whistles, sometimes literally cool little bells and whistles, but like smoke generators, remote control systems, all the fun stuff.
Well, it's neat too, because, you know, these early Lionel trains were powered by batteries, early kind of versions of batteries known as wet cells, which are, you know, these little things that are filled with corrosive acid, which of course were replaced largely by, I believe, dry cell batteries. Although I do know that, you know, certain batteries that you get to this day, like Energizer or whatever, if you leave them inside something for long enough, they do start to corrode, similar to the kind of, you know, corrosion you'll see on your car battery. So there is still some kind of nasty chemical inside these batteries today, right?
Yeah, there's still some weird stuff going on, but you'll run into that with a lot of batteries.
But I think the early wet cell batteries were real nasty. And then they were eventually replaced by transformers, the electric transformer, the 110 volt. And in the early 1900s, of course, electricity was still not a sure thing to be in everybody's home. And there was a lot of fascination around that. And as we mentioned, steam powered trains were already kind of representative of this idea of the future and innovation. And so electricity was, of course, as well. And to incorporate that into a toy that had this aspirational quality already and already represented something that was already kind of considered this image of productivity and ingenuity and the American spirit or all that stuff. It makes sense that they would have taken off.
Yeah, agreed. And there's one thing that they didn't predict amid all their smart business plans: the Great Depression, which again, I think is just a terrible name. So the 1920s and 1930s are this real halcyon era. We'll get to that later too. Halcyon era for model trains. It's a golden age. It's very popular amid the populace. There we go. Popular by the populace. Popular with the people. And the model train layouts, there's kind of like an arms race of who can make the most elaborate, expansive ones. Put your buildings in there. Maybe have lifelike scenes. You know, look at that. It's a little painted mailman. And people dedicated, some people got really into it and dedicated like the entirety of their free time to perfecting every detail about this, the way, you know, the way we play Skyrim.
Right. But really quick, would you consider the Great Depression to be an oxymoron?
I guess technically not really, because I know that, you know, great can just mean of.
That's true. I guess it just reminds magnitude. Me of jumbo shrimp or something, you know.
You're right. I think they could have. I don't know. They had a lot going on when they were trying to come up with the name.
Also, you really think there was a committee meeting to name it? I think it probably much like, you know, the Great War just sort of came up on its own organically.
Yeah. And Lionel on their own website points out that because there was the crazy Gilded Age boom in the 20s, model trains became much more affordable. People were kind of getting into escapism. They wanted to forget World War I, or as they just called it, the World War. And now the credit system is rolling out. So more and more people can afford luxuries that once upon a time would not have been feasible for them.
The American dream, aka debt for life.
Debt for life. So Lionel has ads in every imaginable medium. They're in boys' magazines. They're in a Saturday Evening Post. They're in all the newspapers. They get celebrities to endorse them. They even have branded advertising. There's a Lionel radio show. And they had slogans that were like, real enough for a man to enjoy, simple enough for a boy to operate.
Also, guys, jumping real quick, I got the Tampa Bay Times up, and they say one of the people who named the Great Depression was actually Herbert Hoover. He would refer to it as a depression when he was still in office because it sounded less worrisome to him than a panic. But it was also a guy by the name of Lionel Robbins, no relation, who was a British economist who would name it the Great Depression in 1934.
Well, they could both stand to take some crowdsourcing the next time they name stuff. But yes, the Great Depression, if you're listening to the show, you are very familiar with it. This is a terrible time for the United States and indeed globally. Right before the Great Depression hits, these Lionel catalogs are becoming their own kind of annual publication for kids, you know, when Lego releases a catalog or when Sears or IKEA does, it's something aspirational. And so it seems like the model train is part of, or it's indicative of a successful family. You hang out with your family and play with the trains together. You look through the catalog together and pick your favorites.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
During the entirely depressing depression, Lionel, along with a lot of other toy companies, of course, struggled because this was no longer a necessity. You know, people probably went back to the old European ways of whittling toys for their children, you know, making a flute out of some reeds or something. I'm not trying to be dismissive, but it definitely was not something that was in the budget, right?
Yeah, that's right. Staving off financial ruin quickly became the primary concern for the majority of the United States. And Lionel, like many other companies, was also struggling. They entered receivership, which is sort of a way to keep yourself from the precipice of bankruptcy, and they were going to go under completely. They would have been a thing of the past were it not for a partnership they made with none other than Walt Disney.
Yep.
They debuted the Mickey and Minnie hand car. It's a $1 wind-up toy.
Which would have been like one of those classic mining carts, right? Where like a seesaw kind of situation with Minnie on one side and Mickey on the other. And if you ever are lucky enough to be in San Francisco, I highly recommend checking out the Walt Disney Family Museum, where they have a display of all of this kind of stuff. And Disneyland, Disney World, anything affiliated with the actual Walt Disney Company probably wouldn't, because some of these toys, you know, and this era of stuff could have even ventured into the realm of problematic at times. But you do see the Mickey and Minnie hand car again, like to your point, a buck, which was a lot of money back then, but was still more affordable than some. And Lionel saw the success of this, and they decided to follow up with similar designs, the Union Pacific, the Hiawatha, and the Flying Yankee. And by around 1935, they were able to get out of that receivership because they were once again profitable.
And just for perspective here, too, one of the brilliant things about the Mickey and Minnie toy is that a dollar was a lot more than it is now, but it was still very affordable, more so than a lot of fancy locomotives. So if we could inflation calculate a little bit. $1 in 1934 is, drumroll please, Max.
Can we guess?
Yeah.
Maybe $12.99-ish?
Not too far off. It's drumroll again. We're killing the drumrolls.
It is $23.16, okay, which is surprisingly affordable. You know, that's like a Lego kit.
It's a Lego kit, or maybe a circa the 1990s Ninja Turtle vehicle. Remember those?
I remember the figures. I thought they were more expensive.
The figures were roughly $5. I remember that.
Yeah.
And then the vehicles would have been roughly 4X that, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
The one that flung pizzas. So cool. Remember that? It was like a Humvee that had like a catapult on the back that would fling pizzas. That was cool.
And I remember I had the van where the door would open up.
And the top, right? Yeah, the side. Yeah. Like a machine gun turret almost. Kind of things that definitely did not exist in the show.
No, maybe in the comics. So Lionel becomes profitable again in 1935, as we said. And there is another thing that they did not predict, which was World War II. So World War II has a huge effect on every single manufacturing industry. It's really interesting. We did an episode of Car Stuff about this years back. Automobile production went down to pretty much zero. Actually, to literally zero, because people were busy making weapons of war. The world shifted to wartime production, and everything was prioritizing that. Mm-hmm. So the production of toy trains also starts to decrease because of the materials you need to make them.
It's so funny too, because we just did a couple of episodes on candy, and we talked a good bit about how some of the companies that they sort of repurposed wartime manufacturing equipment to make their weird pill-shaped candies. So once the war was over, they had to kind of pivot back. Some companies that set up just for that kind of manufacturing, and then the war ended. So what do we do with all of this gear? Maybe let's make some weird flavorless sugar tablets. But yeah, so they, again, they pivoted to doing wartime manufacturing. And then once the war ended, then that changed.
Yeah. And look, make no mistake, after surviving the Great Depression, when they become a defense company, they make a lot of money from it because the wallet is open. They just don't make toy trains. And then they said, we're not going to give up on this. There are better times ahead. Let's try to be prescient. Let's get in front of it. And what they did next was somewhat quixotic. They weren't able to make trains, so they started making their magazine, and they started telling sons and fathers in particular, like, go ahead, plan your post-war railroad, think about the better days and talk about weaponizing aspiration. That's brilliant. And that takes them well into the 1950s.
So are they basically saying, like, you can't get this stuff yet? But plan ahead and then you'll be ready to go once production resumes?
Yes.
That's smart.
I think it's a gamble, but it's really, it's so smart that their competitors probably thought they were a little bit idealistic or maybe they weren't thinking things all the way through or they were being foolish, but their gamble paid off. In the 1950s, were the halcyon days of Lionel. And the company itself says this. They had record profits, some of their most successful model trains ever. They had a television show for a second. But when they had that television show, that's when the public, the zeitgeist began to shift, because now people have a new piece of technology that they're fascinated by.
Well, and it can be anything, right? Television, you want to watch trains? There it is. I mean, you got to think about it, man. Like, people were largely doing this stuff because in order to experience this kind of thing, you had to have it physically. You had to be able to touch it and move it around and build it. And, we know that television has certainly had various negative impacts on productivity of individuals, and kids, perhaps the idea of brain rot and all of that, and it being a little bit just overly commercialized and sort of reducing people's imaginations. But of course, all of that stuff comes in cycles as well. So while initially TV offered people this escapism that model trains just couldn't really compete with, and of course, a little bit later, video games. And then, of course, there were cheaper plastic toys that were advertised on TV and in game magazines and action figures and things like that. That nostalgia comes back around.
Mm-hmm. It always does. Also, I just got to take a second and share condolences with all our fellow Reticulous historians who have lived long enough to see an era of time familiar to them become nostalgia, like the 1990s or the early 2000s, you know? That, oof.
That one stings, man. The 2000s one, it hits weird.
It hits you when you hear our radio colleagues playing these things on the oldie station.
Yeah. Also, you're starting to see anniversaries for records that you remember, like they came out yesterday, and it's the 20 or 30 year anniversary. And you're like, oh my God. But hey, I mean, it's cool.
You guys know, like, in just a few weeks, I'm going to see Transatlanticism and Give Up by Postal Service and Death Cab for the second time, 20th anniversary. That's the, like, 10 year, I wouldn't find, but 20 years on that one is like, wild,
I'm more of a Postal Service than Death Cab person. I'm going to see that show as well in Atlanta later this year. But I just remember clearly where I was, what was going on when that Give Up record came out. But yeah, no, I'm with you, Ben. I think we've all experienced this. Anyone of a certain age will understand what this must have felt like. Yeah.
It'll happen to you too. If your teacher is having you listen to this episode on model trains for a school thing, just think about it. 2024 is going to be an oldies era one day, sooner than you think, folks. So anyway, the hobby, again, it kind of loses out to this new fascination with television, but there are always going to be these very dedicated enthusiasts and collectors, and they keep the hobby alive. In the late 20th century, model trains actually experience a revival thanks to that nostalgia, and now you can have, you can leverage new technology.
Track
to make
switchers,
your
right?
Right, your train systems even cooler. Digital control systems, you know, you can replicate, if you want to spend the time and money, you can replicate a full-scale railroad pretty accurately.
I may have mentioned this a time or two on the podcast, but like I've recently, in the last year, gotten really into modular synthesizers. And modular synthesizers are a very similar money pit of perfectly customizable, nerdy, you know, sound creation toys. And that is also what you get with modern model trains. You can pick every aspect of it, down to, like you said, the painted figures, you know, the trees, the buildings, what kind of lead, you know, engine you might have, and you can have multiples and all these switchers and lights, and it's pretty endless, you know, if you want to go down that particular rabbit hole.
And what I think is also fascinating with the model trains here is that there are a lot of adults who are super into them, but there are so many crazy facts about model trains, right? That I'd love to just share a few of these that I got from the Charles Rowe Supply Company, America's largest train store. The most pricey model train ever sold was a Lionel train sold in 2006 for $250,000.
Did Neil Young buy it?
We don't know it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it were a very well-to-do I would assume it's a very well-to-do person.
It would have to be.
The largest train set on the world right now, per the Guinness Book of World Records, is Miniatur Wunderland in Hamburg. It has 1,300 trains, more than 10,000 carriages, 100,000 moving vehicles, lights, trees. You name it.
I want to go. You think we can get work to pay for that trip?
It might be a forgiveness v. permission
fair,
thing.
Fair. All
right. We have to really sell it. Yeah. So, and we have to get Max in there too.
No question.
We'll pepper in some more things. I think one thing we do have to deliver on here is, Noel, we mentioned previously the gauge of model trains.
And the scales, and the ratios. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe let's, for anybody who's interested in getting into the model train hobby or the world of model trains, what should they know about scales?
Well, it's a couple of terms, and we've already kind of discussed this. The scale of a model train is its size relative to the proportion of the real thing. If you want to sound like you're in the know in model train communities, the real thing is referred to as the prototype. which is pretty cool. We start off with something called G-scale, which is, I believe, the largest of the standard scales.
This comes from Lehman Big Trains, or Lehman Grossbahn. And they have a lot of variation in scale, but like you could get one that's 1 to 20 or 1 to 32, but generally those scales are, even if they're different scales, the trains themselves will run on the same gauge track.
That makes sense. It would get too complicated. You'd have to have some standardization in order for it to all kind of gel together. And again, sorry, not to get too nerdy into the modular synth stuff, but even though they're all different sizes and fill up different spaces in a rack, they all use, most of them use the same size screw holes to affix them into these racks, even though there's tons of different manufacturers that make all kinds of different stuff. There should be some basic standardization in order for these companies to be able to kind of play together in the same space.
Sure. And then we've got other things like the O
which
scale,
which we talked about, early.
The OS.
Yeah, some of the bigger ones.
Right. And Lytle still makes O scale trains and accessories along with a couple of other companies. Shout out to the pater familias of our pals Max and Alex. Mr. Williams would have an O-scale train around the Christmas tree every year.
You haven't even evoked that image. That's another wonderful kind of classic golden age image, you know, very similar to like the F.A.O. Schwartz kind of window dressing stuff. That a model train going around and around the Christmas tree. That's pretty nostalgic stuff right there.
Yeah.
And when I say biggest, by the way, for O-scale, I think I'm referring to most popular.
Ah, yes. Yeah. And then, of course, there's HO scale, there's N scale, Z scale. Look, what we're saying is if you are remotely interested in model trains, there is a wide world of stuff to choose from, and there are a ton of people who want to experience that with you. Noel Max sent us something that I'm surprised I didn't know about because I love these kinds of specific events. There is a model train and Railroadiana show that comes to Atlanta. It was here in January.
Awesome. Okay.
I want to go see a model train show.
I do too.
Well, you might be in luck. We got another one May 4th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And it is in Ackworth.
I'll be busy doing Star Wars stuff. I'm just joking. I don't do that. You know, May the 4th be with you and all that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's a thing. Yeah. No, that sounds cool. I would love to go to that. And by the way, when I mentioned Sebastian Bach earlier, largely from Skid Row, I largely know about his love of model trains because of a particular season of the Canadian kind of sitcom Trailer Park Boys that involves the heist of a particularly expensive model train from a Canadian model train expo, and it sort of follows the Trailer Park Boys around throughout the entire season, and it's a lot of fun.
I want to throw one more thing. We just have to say it because, you know, being an American-based show, we love some hyperbole. We love some superlatives. You might ask yourself, well, guys, what is the largest single model train engine? The answer is the Thomas the Tank Engine that was built for a special tour by BBC Visual Effects. It weighs 1.5 tons.
What?
I don't know if you can still call that a model train. So, you know what? We'll have to write to Guinness World Records.
If it's smaller than a train, though, and it works the same way, it's a miniature.
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah.
Miniature can be anything smaller.
And last thing for me, because this is something that maybe we should have mentioned early on, but if you're wondering how model trains are powered today, we talked about the early steamy ones and the battery ones and then replaced by the transformer. It's interesting because they're actually powered largely the way subways are powered, through a current that is carried and transmitted into the engine, for all intents and purposes, or the transformer, through a powered rail. That it has like, you know, either soldered or clipped power current running through it that comes from a power supply. So part of the modular nature of model trains also comes down to like wiring up the power. And if you're not careful, don't know what you're doing, you could accidentally give yourself a zap. Right, Max?
Oh, absolutely. And that had me thinking, this is a future spoiler. I was researching something else that is on tracks, and that's called Third Track. The third track being the power track. And there was something else that is now a two track, but they did with a third track and had very bad consequences.
Got it.
So look forward to that episode coming up, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you find yourself in Malden, Massachusetts, do stop by the Charles Rose Supply Company. They are the world's largest dealer of Lionel trains. And I think they're one of the biggest just trains, model train stores in general around. So if you ever have a specific a need for a weird specific trip or adventure, please, folks, come to us because we can help you out. Monster cars, what else? Model trains. We're getting into some weird things. Modular synths, all of the Legos.
We had two episodes to complain about fonts.
Oh, gosh, yeah. We also have an episode that's sort of been in the kitty for a while about the history of women in electronic music and sound design and film scoring and things like that. Maybe we can sneak a little bit of nerdy modular synth stuff and history into that one, if you guys would indulge me. But yeah, really excited about all the stuff that we've got coming up. Great tease for a future episode there, Max. And boy, I never knew there was this much to know about Model Train.
Thanks, as always, to our super producer and research associate for this episode, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed this slamming track you're hearing. Thanks to Eve's Jeffcoat, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quister, who 100% digs model trains. I know it. I know the man well. He's a model train head.
Huge thanks to AJ Bahamas Jacobs, who is he's a head of all kinds. His head is full of all kinds of esoteric and fascinating knowledge. Alex Williams, who composed our theme.
Yes, Eve's Jeffcoat, who may be returning soon. I just want to give her a shout out twice. Gabe Lousier, Lionel themselves, and thanks to you, Noel.
And you as well, Ben. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch, so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.